Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? It's Vinny Martell from the Vanilla Fudge, lead guitarist, U.S. Navy veteran. And it's been a pleasure being on Mark Striegel's show. So keep rocking, everybody. And check out VanillaFudge.com. Please come down to the shows and say hello.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of the Talking Metal Podcast. Thank you for listening, guys. As always, I love talking with these rock and roll legends. And today, it is another one. And we got some great stories out of him. We are speaking with Vince Martell of the legendary band Vanilla Fudge, the band that took Led Zeppelin out on the road, the band that influenced Deep Purple. And again, Vince Martell, the guitar player. Vinny, thank you for joining me, man. I love the stories. And of course, Carmine is a longtime friend of Talking Metal, and he is also in Vanilla Fudge. If you haven't seen some of the videos I've done with Carmine, just go to my YouTube page. It's youtube.com/talkingmetal. But today we are talking Vanilla Fudge with Vince Martell, the guitar player. So stay tuned for that interview. And before we get into the episode, let's thank everyone who supports us on Patreon. Nick Beach, Nick over in Australia. I hope you got your t-shirt, man. I mailed it out a while ago at this point, but I haven't heard from you, so I hope it arrived. If not, let me know. I'll mail another one out. Hopefully that one will actually make it to you. Who else? Mrs. Metal Dan, Sam Warwick, Kato Yokova, Adrian Cusick, Dane Damage, Madison Hatter, Seth B., Alan Janssen, Hank Reeves, John Simpson, Huckney Jacobson, Ed Ferguson, Denny Striegel, Patrick Sabin, Jerry from Salt Lake City. Can you believe Jerry from Long Island? He left Patreon. I can't believe it. I don't know. What did I say, Jerry? What did I do to tick you off? Anything? I hope not. I do understand when people leave. Listen, you know, money doesn't grow on trees these days. I know that as well as anybody. Big thanks to Jerry from Long Island for supporting me so long on Patreon. And you know, you are always my brother, sir. Whenever you want, you got my number. Just text me. It doesn't matter if you're supporting me on Patreon or not, to be honest. I do appreciate all the love you've given Talking Metal through the years. Jerry from Long Island, no longer on Patreon. But Jerry from Salt Lake City, still rocking it. Thank you, Jerry. Blue Walsh 21, Victor Guzman, Gene Eugene DX, Sean Richmond, Mario Charance, Andrew Miller, Jeremy Weltman, Chris Riley, Johan Erdestrom, Stephen Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Gregory Muse, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo from Alaska, Brad Dahl from Yarg Metal, Dan Gerwan, of course, my partner in crime on the Patreon-only podcast, Victor M. Ruiz, Sam Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Stephen Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blah, Anthony Mackey, James Bennett, David Gray, Fred Rutz, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, John Bovary, Metal Dan. Thank you, all you people. You guys rock. Let's get into the episode right now. All right, so we're going to get right into our interview with the one and only Vinny Martell from Vanilla Fudge, man. You know, I know everyone's like, Vanilla Fudge, they got to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I get it, but the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's such a klutzy thing, man. I just think it's almost cooler that they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They almost have more street cred in my book, but that's just me. Anyways, I'm not going to do much talking today. We're going to just listen to this great interview, man, and I'll come back after the interview and check out with you guys. All right, here we go. Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and what an honor to be talking to a legendary rock and roller guitarist, Vincent Martella. How are you, man?
Very good, Mark. Very good. Thank you.
You have such an incredible history, and we want to get right into it. Vanilla Fudge, a band that did so much, but when the average person thinks about Vanilla Fudge, they probably think about the cover that you guys made famous of the Supremes classic back in the 60s, and that Keep Me Hanging On, right?
Yes, that's it. Yes.
And to kind of bring things full circle, a cool thing that just happened is the band with the original members, including the late great Tim Bogart, just released another Supremes song, and it is just great. And it's just so cool to have you four guys together one last time on this recording, doing nonetheless, you know, a Supreme song. Can you talk a little bit about how this cover of Stop in the Name of Love came about?
Yeah, it came about because we were talking with the management and everything, and they kind of felt that since we started out and got Keep Me Hanging On by the Supremes was our big song back when we first came out, 67. So, you know, maybe we should look to get into that direction again. So Mark came up with the idea of let's do that particular song. So we were up for, there was, you know, quite a few songs that we were thinking of doing. And in fact, we were even toying with the idea, which we might follow through on, of doing a whole album of Supremes songs.
Wow, so, cool.
Yeah, right. So in the meantime, we figured, all right, let's do that. So that's what we did. We started working on it, and Timmy was still here with us. And we decided, let's really get Timmy on. If we can get Timmy on for one last song, he's such a fantastic bass player. And thank the good Lord, we were able to get him on. And he wasn't feeling good. He was sick. He was just under the weather. He was very in pain and whatever, but he managed to get himself to the studio. I think Carmine went out to California and they set up something at a studio. He came down in his pajamas and he had a bass, a nice new four-string bass. We always liked the way he sounded on the four-string Fender. And he put down this beautiful bass part. So once we had that, we had the drums, the bass, we had the skeleton of the tune, we had Mark's come out with some ideas for it. I had some ideas for that. That's it. We put it together, and I'm just so glad that we got Timmy before he passed, you know?
Yeah, and it is just an amazing listen, guys. It's up everywhere on Spotify, Apple Music, and I think you can get it through the website. Is there a vinyl version of it or a CD version of it too?
I have no idea at this point, but I hope that they do. I think that they probably will do something like that, but I don't know for sure yet what's what.
Yeah, when you go back to the original Supreme song that you guys did, Keep Me Hanging On, I mean, you know, I hear people talk about, oh, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, but there's a lot of other people, Mick Mars from Motley Crue being one of them, who said when he saw the Vanilla Fudge on Ed Sullivan, that playing that song, that really changed his life, and that he knew he wanted to be a rock star then. I mean, that was such a powerful performance. What do you remember about going on the Ed Sullivan show and playing this song to literally, I mean, back in those days, millions and millions of people watched this show?
Yeah, right. And who was the guy that said all that?
Mick Mars of Motley Crue told me that right, he remembered seeing the Vanilla Fudge on Ed Sullivan, and it was such a big musical moment for him as a kid.
Wow, that's beautiful to hear that. I remember that it was a 3-day affair. The first day you get down to the theater, which later became the Letterman Theater.
Yeah, on, Broadway, yeah.
Yes, Broadway is 7th Avenue, right around there. And the first day you show up and you're in regular street clothes and whatever it is, and you run through, not necessarily playing the whole song, but you see where you would stand and you would... Actually, I think we probably did run through the song, a rough version. And but they get an idea of all the acts and where they're going to be placed in the show and stuff like that. And then the next day you show up and you have your outfit on that you're going to be on the show, and you do the whole performance that you're going to do. They tape it. And the reason is that because then that would be, in other words, the first day was a Friday. The second is a Saturday that you do this. And then the show is on a Sunday. And then Sunday you do the show live, and while you're doing the show live, they are behind the scenes concurrently running the video that they took of you the day before. So in case there's any kind of a mishap while you're doing it live,
wow.
They can switch right to the tape, and the people at home would most likely, you know, see maybe a little glitch go by or something, but that's it. Looks like it's continuous performance, so that's a fail safe that they have built into the thing. So I remember it was very elaborate that it was 3 days to get the show going, but it came out without a problem, and it was just a great thing.
Yeah, and I mean, that song that you guys covered, it became so iconic. I mean, even to this day, just a couple years ago, I was watching this Quentin Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the whole climax of the movie is built like on a music montage of that song. I mean, would you have ever imagined that, you know, many, many decades later, that song would still have such power?
No, I never really thought about that kind of stuff, but that's the way it is. When you have something recorded, it's down forever. So for somebody like Quentin Tarantino wanted to use it into his movie, that was, you know, great. And, I saw the movie. It was a great part where he put us in there at the most intensive part of the movie, and it just fit in, I mean, beautifully. So, in fact, we mentioned to the management that when we heard they were going to go for the Oscars and all that kind of stuff, that we were interested in being able to play it live if they wanted us to do it, if he won, you know, top honors for that. But either way, it was just a great charge to see that, to hear it. It's really a kick when you hear the stuff live, especially like in the movie. It was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys were so influential, too. I mean, I mentioned Mick Mars of Motley Crue, who cites you guys as a big influence. But, I mean, we're talking other major rock bands, some of your contemporaries, really, if you will. Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple. I just read Ian Gillan's book, and he talks about what fans Deep Purple were of Vanilla Fudge. And, you know, before Ian was in the band, they covered the song Hush, and they were going for a Vanilla Fudge sound when they did that. Let's start with Deep Purple. What do you remember about these guys back in the day? I know you've had run-ins with them in more recent times, but did you play shows with them? Did you know them back in the 60s, early 70s?
We did a couple of shows with them. We did something up, one that I remember that stands out in my mind was something that we did up in Canada. And it was a show because Blackmore had a Red 335, the guitar that I first used on Keep Me Hanging on our first album. And he had one, and I was interested in buying it. I was interested if he was looking to sell it, which he wasn't. But that's what he was playing at the time. And we were at a college or something like that, 3,000-seater auditorium. And there was, you know, all the people are sitting down, like on the floor, basically watching the concert, and we're playing. And what I remember about that, and it doesn't have to do with really Deep Purple, but what I remember about that is that while we were doing Take Me for a Little While, one of the guys from the college, muscle-bound type of a guy, got up in front of us, and he's flexing his muscles. I don't know if he was stoned or what was happening.
Right.
And our road manager, it was crazy. Our road manager's behind the amps. He sees this. He comes running out and pushes the guy. Head. The guy goes flying into the audience, and we never missed a beat. We just kept playing the tune.
Wow.
So that's something I always remember when we did the Deep Purple show was that, and the fact of looking to buy Blackmore's Red 335 guitar. But, yeah, you know, we talked a little bit. We said hello. We didn't really have a chance when you're doing that those kind of shows sometimes to do too much hobnobbing in the back for some reason. It's like kind of war a little bit. You're like, you know, they're trying to get over on you. You're trying to get over on them. And, you know, so I would kind of, I guess, keep a little bit of a distance, but getting too friendly with the guys that you're going up against with, so to speak. That's just my personal thing. But
right.
It was a great opportunity to be able to do shows with them. And then we hung out with them in California later on. And years later, Roger Glover was there and a couple of the guys. And then we did Radio City Music Hall with them.
Right
so
on.
So we touched base here and there as we're going along. You know?
And another band that I know you played, I think, a bunch of shows with, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they were opening for you guys, was Led Zeppelin. And it was one of their first times out on the road. Is that correct?
Exactly, yeah, because right before Led Zeppelin got together, Jimmy Page, you know, was in the Yardbirds. And we did a show with them up in Seattle with the Yardbirds. And it's funny, I have an incident that happened going up to that show, which is in my book. I have a book out called Psychedelic Solo, and I mentioned that particular story, but I won't get into it now. But it was just something that happened on the way to that gig. But after that, after we did that gig, then later on, a short time later, Jimmy Page got Zeppelin together, and they came over to the U.S., and Peter Grant wanted them to break out into the U.S. of A., and our management, which was a very had many heavy connections, let me say, decided, yeah, let's you know, give these guys a chance. So they did. They opened up for us. I think we were doing shows with Concerts West out on the West Coast, and we did a handful of shows, and they were opening for us. And that's when Jimmy Page was using his Telecaster before he got his Les Paul, and we did, you know, a handful of shows like that all over the Midwest, Salt Lake City, Portland, Seattle, I think. It was quite a few. And then shortly after that, Jimmy Page got his Les Paul. And so that's what happened. Basically, they opened up for us when they came. In the meantime, we had been together so much, we needed a break. So we decided, let's split for a while and take a break. And what happened is the management and the business people just kept on going, and we got off the wagon to take a break, and they kept on going, and they just kept on moving. So then time started going by, and then things start changing, you know. So, but yes.
And were you playing Les Paul when they were opening up for you?
Be honest with you, I don't know if I was playing. I did have like the oldest Les Paul I ever saw. I had to go buy it in Canada. We did a gig up in Canada, and I bought this old one that had wooden pegs like an acoustic guitar has for the strings to go into the body. It didn't even have the metal bridge. It had a V-neck. It had the old soap bar pickups. A beautiful, it sounded like a horn. I got it on, I used it on Street Walking Woman and a couple other tunes we did on our, I think it was the Near the Beginning album. But I either had that or I used different guitars. I had an L5 when we did the Shrine in L.A. for the Near the Beginning album, the break song. I had 335s I used. I used some SGs. So, to be honest with you, I don't remember exactly what
right.
I had at that time, but... I had a lot of different guitars I used at different times. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if Jimmy started playing Les Paul after he saw you playing a Les Paul. That's what I was wondering.
Well, I heard that he said that he didn't feel that the Telly was the right sound for Zeppelin. So I don't know, maybe I influenced him a little bit.
Right.
That would be cool to know that. I don't know that, but I wanted to mention also that when they first came to the U.S., Zeppelin, Robert Plant used to bring a Victrola and a suitcase of records he brought over with him from England, and me and Mark Stein went up to his apartment in the hotel, in the hotel room where he wanted to show us all the records that he had, the blues records. So we were talking to him up there, and we were telling him, yeah, you should move more on the stage and, you know, get into more of an act where it's like a whole show watching, you know. Not that we kicked off the guy's career. I mean, the guy's a
right.
tremendous talented guy. But, you know, I remember that particular thing, too, so I wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, well, he was very green at that time. I mean, he was, I think I want to say, like 5 years younger than Jimmy Page and hadn't had the experience. So he probably took your advice. And I'm sure, you know, that definitely played into it, in my opinion.
Well, he did say on some place on his website or something that Zeppelin, that Vanilla Fudge was everything that they wanted to be. I mean, I was like, holy geez, how do you like that? When they first started and they came over here when they saw us. So, you know, we went over to England before that and we played. And I met Jeff Beck and Brian Jones from the Stones, Rod Stewart. They all came down to this club we played. I don't know if it was called the Speakeasy or I believe it was. And there was just a load of English acts there to see us. And then we did something with The Who, which might have been the second time we went over there and we played a little louder than them, and they didn't like that.
Right, right.
A great write-up in the paper. So, you know, it's been a really interesting career.
The Who were very competitive. There's a story about them playing Monterey Pop with Jimi Hendrix and them fighting over volume and who was smashing the guitars and not really vibing that well with Hendrix. And speaking of Hendrix, I mean, you knew Jimmy, right? How well did you know Jimmy?
I know him a little bit well, not too well, but, you know, we did a lot of gigs with Jimmy, the great Jimmy Hendrix. We did 13 dates in a row. All over the place. Basically, again, for concerts west and the Midwest, Red Rocks, Colorado, San Diego, Anaheim, Hollywood Bowl. I mean, a lot of gigs we did when we flew on the same plane. We talked to him. We were up in the hotel room when he first came out with possibly the second album or the third one. We went up to our management. A guy was with us and me, and I don't know who else from the Fudge, probably Mark Stein, and a couple of us went up to listen to it. Yes, it was our opinion of it. It was tremendous. Real head trip. I got to know him also because he used to jam at the Steam, at the Scene, Steve Paul Scene on West 46th Street, Manhattan, New York. Off Faith Avenue, and he would jam there, I guess, when he was off time, and we would place that musicians would hang out. So one night we're down there, and everybody's jamming. Everybody wants to jam with Jimmy, and I didn't really want to, you know, push myself along. Yeah, let me jam with him, because, you know, when a rock star like that wants to take a break, let him enjoy himself. He wants to jam, he'll jam whoever he wants, but everybody wanted to jam with him anyway. And Eddie Kramer was there, and Eddie Kramer said, listen, when the place closed, now it's 4 o'clock in the morning now, this had been going on from probably 11 o'clock at night or something, or 12 or 1, whatever it is, in the morning. And so Eddie Kramer's there, and Eddie Kramer said, look, let's go down to the record plant. I have the keys. We'll run the machines. So
wow.
We all went down here, a whole bunch of us. I think Carmen was there, Buddy Miles was there, Jack Cassidy might have been in the, you know, because who's smoking what, who's drinking what, you know.
Yeah.
Who remembers?
Crazy times.
Really. And we walked down to 44th Street to the record plant, and we go in, and I guess Eddie put on the machines, and we start jamming, and Jimmy, you know, lets me start the jam. He looks at me, and he says, you know, He's given me the nod to get. So I started some kind of a slow blues thing, and I got into it, and that's it. I did some playing, and then he got into it. He started playing, and you know, it was fans, groupies, I guess. I
mean, oh my
everybody,
God.
You know, it was real. It was like a party going on until like daylight.
Vinny, where is this tape? This was recorded?
Yeah, I guess Eddie Kramer recorded it. At least he was going to run the tapes, and you know, Jimmy gave me the high sign to start, so I assumed the thing was gone. But you know, I was probably too—I don't know, maybe smoking too much, drinking too much, whatever. And I didn't even ask for a copy. I don't know. I never heard the thing that, unless I did hear that there is a CD out, an album that they put out of Jimmy that said, "I woke up and found myself dead." Did you ever hear that title?
I didn't, but that yeah, doesn't, well, yeah.
That's a crazy one, yeah. And they were saying they didn't know who the guitar player was on that. So I'm trying to run that down and see if maybe that's me. I should be able to tell if it was me on the beginning of that. So,
wow.
But I didn't ask for a copy at the time, and I think there's so much going on to also think in those terms, let me get a copy. You know, it's just like we're in a world when I got that stuff, the story of that in my book, too. That's, you know. That's
yeah, what's your book? Yeah, I got to get it. I don't have your book. I got to pick up a copy for sure. Can you tell us the name of your book?
Yeah, it's called Psychedelic Solo. And that's it. It's basically my whole life story is basically what it is, growing up in the Bronx in New York and going to Catholic school for a while, and then going into the Navy, and then playing music down in Florida if I got out of the Navy, and then coming up and getting into, I was in a band called Alan Vallone and the Spirit in New York City for a little while, and one of the guys in the band was Freddie Lipsius, who was the alto sax player from Blood, Sweat, and Tears when they
oh,
started.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I believe, yeah, I think he's a professor up at up in Boston at the music school up there, Berkeley.
Berkeley, yeah, sure. Sure,
so,
very cool.
But then shortly after that, I got a call. I had been going down to the Union Hall in New York City, and I got a call from a fellow named Joey Brennan, who was the drummer with Mark Stein and Timmy Bogert. And next thing, I get a call from Joey, and we get together over at Timmy's house, and that's how I got, you know, together with the guys. And then
originally called
that,
the Pigeons, so, right? The Pigeons, and then you changed the name to Vanilla Fudge. Is that what happened?
Yes, yeah. We were the Pigeons, and then the record company didn't really like the name.
So yeah, I like Vanilla Fudge better. Yeah,
we. You know what it is? It's funny because we. Yeah, I got all this in the book. We didn't really care for the name The Pigeons either, but that was given to us by a guy in a business named Jeff Barry, who's a big mogul with Mercury Records and that kind of stuff. And, you know, when you're trying to come up, you don't really want to say no when somebody suggests they want to do something and they're going to get behind it for you, you know, so you end up a lot of times you go along with, even if you don't think it's the coolest name. But, you know, it was a lot of animal names were happening at the time, the Beatles, the Birds, the, you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
I guess they figured, let's give that a shot. But my book is available. It's special order at this particular point. It's on my website, vincemartel.com.
Cool.
Information. Yeah. And it's, like I say, the whole life story of rocking.
Right. Well, wow. I definitely got to pick up a copy of that. And we want to remind the listeners that the truly historic track Stop in the Name of Love, because it's the last time that we will hear you four guys together on a song, and again kind of brings things really full circle, if you will. But you know, Tim hadn't really been active with Vanilla Fudge for a while, and he came back to do this song with you, but the band has been active and you guys are out there still playing gigs. Can you talk about the current lineup of the band?
Well, it's Mark Stein still, keyboard, original great keyboardist, vocalist, Carmine Appice, who it speaks for himself, his drumming, you know, fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah.
Player. We have a fellow named Pete Bremmy who used to be in the Vince Martell band playing bass. He got to know Timmy. He got to know the group. And then when Timmy decided to retire, Pete was ready to walk into it because he had already been a road manager for us and a tour manager for us, and he knew Timmy and everybody was comfortable with him. He knew all the tunes. He knew all the Vanilla Fudge. So he was a real heavy-duty fan originally when he was first saw us playing in Jersey. And so it was like he walked in. We needed somebody like I think Timmy might have gotten sick on one gig. He couldn't make. We had like a couple of days to get somebody. Pete was ready to walk in. So it ends up now Pete's been with us over 10 years.
Right on.
And he could he's emulated Timmy's important parts that he's done, like in the, again, that song Take Me for a Little While. There's a little bass interlude there. He's got that down. He's got Timmy's vocal. He could hit the high notes Timmy used to hit. So it really was like a natural to have him in there. And then, you know, me, I'm still, you know, rocking out on guitar.
Right on. And I mean, to have 3/4 of the classic original lineup is really rare nowadays. I mean, we see bands out there, they have like one member, sometimes zero members. I won't mention any names, but there's some bands
you're right,
just keeping the brand alive at this point. But yeah, so yes. Vanilla Fudge still operating with 3 of the 4 original members intact. And yeah, so there were some gigs planned. Are gigs happening? What's going on with live shows right now, Vinny?
Well, we had we had 9 shows scheduled. In fact, we had a couple that were scheduled this past weekend up in Chicago that got blown out. But you know, this COVID thing, which blew everything out for like over a year and a half, all the gigs had been canceled. But anyway, we had 9. But those 2 in Chicago, I guess the promoters got cold feet or something. I don't know. They canceled them out last minute. But we have 7, and we're going to be doing the Keswick in Philly, Keswick Theater, and Virginia. We're doing a couple of gigs in New York City, the Sony Center, which might have been something else before. It was the Sony Center. Maybe it was just taken over by Sony. I don't know. But we got something in Long Island, New York, at the Suffolk County Theater.
Cool.
Suffolk Theater.
And these are coming up soon?
Yeah, this is all going to be actually starting at the end of October.
Okay, great. Great, cool. I'm going to try to make one of those shows, and I'd love to say hi to you in person if it's possible.
Of course, Mark. Yeah, come up and say hello. Tell them who you are when you get there and that you know the guys in the band and you want to say hello. We know you, you know, that kind of stuff.
Perfect. Excellent. Cool. Well, it's been a true honor talking with you, and we got to get Vanilla Fudge in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's just absolutely ridiculous that a band that influenced Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, and so forth is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but that's a whole nother topic, I guess, and discussion point.
That's a lot of politics in rock and roll, like everything else, man. It's all politics and stuff like that. So yeah, you're right. I agree with you, though. I hope we can get in there one of these days. Pretty soon would be nice.
All right. Well, we wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much, sir. And I'm serious. We'll definitely try to come say hi when we're at a show.
Oh, that's great, man. Do it, and I appreciate this very much.
Okay, will do. Perfect. You have a good night,
okay,
sir.
Mark.
Vinny, thank you so much for joining me on Talking Metal. Thank you to you guys for listening. And I'm thinking of leaving the every Tuesday schedule. I'm just kind of playing around with that. Maybe just leaving Tuesday and just kind of throwing episodes up whenever I want. A lot of good interviews coming up. We haven't recorded any of them, so I don't want to jinx them by announcing them. But some cool people who we haven't had on the show yet, who I am looking forward to. Actually, the next 3 interviews, which are all booked for this week. I don't know how I'm going to manage all this with my actual real job, but they are all new to the podcast, and one of them I've been a big fan of for a long time. I might let Emily do some of these interviews. So there you go. Actually, I'm thinking right now, I think we actually have 4 interviews coming up. Anyways, lots of stuff coming. I know we went a little while without any interviews, and we had the Zach interview and the Doc McGee interview, and then there was an episode or two without any interviews. So anyways, interviews are coming back. I know you guys like those. I can tell, you know, the listenership goes up when we do have interviews. So I appreciate that. I appreciate you liking the conversation I have with these rockers. All right. So let's stay true, guys. Stay safe. And check out Talking Rock. We just posted a new episode of that, Joey Haney and I. And if you want even more Mark Striegel, you can get the bonus podcast on Patreon every week, every Monday. All right. That's $2 a month, man. Killer. $2 a month. All right. Later.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.